Session 55, May 17, 1965. The Early Sessions, Volume 4. Good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, the relationship with Frederick Fell will be a good one, although the present contract reflects the publisher's caution, as well as the money already received reflects an impulsive belief in Rupert on the publisher's part. The caution can later work to Rupert's advantage, in that Fell is usually cautious in business relationships. The impulsiveness caused him to forward the money already received, however. Undoubtedly, Rupert could receive better clauses if he pressed for them. At this point, however, it will be to his advantage to leave matters as they are. A later trip to New York, perhaps when the manuscript is completed, may, however, prove most beneficial. Also, a lively concern shown by Rupert in his letters as to publicity matters and promotion, with mention later of other books in the field that he plans. He could indeed press for better clauses now, but in one way he would lose a certain advantage. He is an unknown quantity to the publisher to a large degree. His letter, however, did make an impression upon Mr. Fell. Rupert is the underdog at this point. He has, however, gained several advantages, as you know, in altering the terms originally offered. The book will be successful in terms of beginning to establish Rupert in reputation, and also successfully in financial terms. Because this contract is less than Rupert could press for, the next contract will be a much better one, since the publisher will then feel rather embarrassed concerning this contract. Rupert, of course, should make his own decision with your help. I am stating simply what I see. Rob notes, Jane now took a very long pause, sitting quite still for well over a minute. Seth, a trip now would not be nearly as advantageous as a trip later. Rupert's concern should be with his manuscript. After this book, he will be in a much better bargaining position. The added worries involved are not now worth the mental and psychic strains that they would cause. This could reflect in the book itself. In one way, he will not be making as much money as he could if he insisted upon changes in the contract. On the other hand, the important thing here is that the book be completed with full psychic and creative powers without distraction. The book will be an important one, and in the overall, the money difference will not be great enough to tip the scales. The experience in the business will be invaluable in any case. The most important clause, the option clause, has been settled in Rupert's favor. He has done very well, actually, in maintaining fairly decent equilibrium. I here suggest your first break. Seth continues, this endeavor, the book, should be carried on now unceasingly, with periods of complete relaxation or change weekends. But the work should be intensive during the week. There should be no vacation unless Rupert takes the manuscript with him and works upon it. This would work out very well both for him and the book. His natural energies will carry him along here, and these energies will be reflected and caught in the book itself. It is to his advantage that the earlier publisher did not take the book. It is the subject matter of the book that intrigued both publishers, plus Rupert's belief in the book. But it is also the subject matter, to some degree, that made Mr. Fell cautious, and that finally caused the earlier publisher to turn it down. I suggest a break. Rob notes, Jane now began to cough. She had been sipping some fruit juice at break. The coughing was not violent, but it became persistent. She sat with her eyes closed for a minute or two while she tried to control it. Jane had been dissociated, but toward the last realized she was coughing. Seth, she said, took a break so that she could rest. She drank some water, remarked that as far as she could remember, this was the first time she had ever so interrupted a session. Without checking each session, I agree. Seth, a paperback edition will indeed appear. I wanted this evening to discuss these matters, since you have both been concerned with them. I am aware of the work done on the book so far and find that it is quite indeed remarkable. The Seth book will be finished at the correct time. Rupert may trust the pendulum, although care should be taken as far as predictions are concerned. Though with training, the pendulum will give valid answers to predictions. Our Wednesday evening session may well be somewhat longer than usual, since for this one I was mainly concerned with discussing the practical problem at hand, since it is important that the air be cleared in this respect. Do you, Joseph, have any questions of your own concerning the book? Rob, no, I think we've covered everything I had in mind. Seth, the main points, I believe, have been taken care of. I will here again suggest that Rupert return to a definite scheduled psychological time habit. The walk to the river is an excellent idea for you both, and your suggestions, Joseph, concerning suppers there is a very good one. You will both find it effective and refreshing. Rupert's predictions and his dream records will again improve. To some degree, he was tied up in knots. Although his condition is far superior to what it would have been under the same circumstances at any time in the past. For short periods, sunbathing will be restful for him. Rob, how about the way we use the pendulum to check our predictions after the event? Is that a valid use of it? Seth, the pendulum can be used to check predictions, although such a study will involve long-term experimentation. Any material proof of this sort is extremely difficult, since oftentimes you pick up a generalized picture of coming events, so to speak, and the words that you use are so literal that they cannot convey the whole picture sufficiently enough so that validity can be proven in your terms. By all means, continue. Rupert now is in a very relaxed state. I will leave him in it and close this short but most fruitful session. Wednesday's session, however, will be a long and compact one, longer perhaps in time than usual, and even more compact in terms of material delivered. Our spring and summer sessions should be particularly enjoyable to us all. If you have any questions, however, I will answer them. Rob, how come the pendulum will sometimes say Jane or I made valid predictions when we don't see any connection consciously? For many months now, both Jane and I have followed a practice of making perhaps half a dozen predictions for the following day. Usually, each one consists of three or four words at the most. On the day the predictions were made for, we check them against what we can consciously remember of the day's events. It is great fun to make them, and was Jane's idea originally. Lately, we have begun using the pendulum to verify the validity of our predictions and our interpretation of them. To our surprise, we have discovered that the pendulum does not always agree with our conscious interpretations. At times it will agree with our predictions and our interpretations. At times it will not agree with our interpretation of what it calls a valid prediction. And at times it will state that a prediction is valid, when we can see nothing during the following day's events to the prediction. Seth, the range is very large, oftentimes too large, for the conscious mind to perceive a particular segment of it. Clairvoyant material comes constantly. Some of it is used and acted upon. Other portions are discarded simply because the particular information is not pertinent. Tell Rupert that he can now rest assured concerning the book. My best and fondest regards to you both. Rupert has used much energy in worrying about the contract in general. For this reason, I wanted to discuss it this evening, and because his energies were momentarily depleted, I am holding a rather short session. We will return to our regular sessions and to a continuation of our discussions. You will both be better off, however, for this evening's session, and I think you will notice an assured, calm, yet sure increase in Rupert's energies. You are doing very well, incidentally. I bid you now both a fond good evening, and if Rupert does not watch out, then I will charge him 10% as his agent. Rob, good night, Seth. Session 156, May 19, 1965. The Early Sessions, Volume 4. Good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, my springtime robins, though you are not as plump as springtime robins, nor is your chirp quite as melodious, nor for that matter is my own. I have watched with some amusement the proceedings of the last few days, as Rupert involved himself with his contract, hemmed and hawed, worried about it, and clucked. I am not one to say I told you so necessarily. However, I did tell you so, not only concerning the book sale, but also concerning the fact that it would be advantageous for Rupert to leave his gallery position. His ability to focus direction of energy in his writings has vastly improved due to the last month's labors, and will show in his book. Rob notes, Seth suggested Jane leave the gallery job in the 82nd session, August 27, 1964, and she soon did. In the 92nd session, September 28, 1964, Seth predicted the sale of Jane's book on ESP by name. Today, Jane signed her contract for the book and will mail it to F. Fell tomorrow. Seth, now we will speak again concerning action. Our material on the fifth dimension seemed almost infinite to you at the time. That is, the fifth dimension appeared infinite in its complexity. But you see that it is but one dimension within an infinite number of dimensions. For there are infinite possibilities in the patterns which action can of itself form. Rob, see the 12th session for Seth's first discussion of the fifth dimension. Seth, I do not intend to number indefinitely or list an endless number of dimensions of actuality, though we will go into this later to some small degree. I am much more concerned for now that you understand the dimensions of action as they exist within the dream world, within psychological realities, and within other scopes with which you are yourselves somewhat familiar. Your experiments with the pendulum are quite helpful to you in that the subconscious is allowed, through its own action, to make itself more readily available. Your own conscious awareness is increased because you are then aware of inner actions with which the conscious mind had not been familiar. Here we have a coming together of actions, a joining and an immersion of one action within another, the action of the subconscious in answering questions put to it by the conscious mind, use brain rather than mind, and the acceptance, which is itself action on the part of consciousness of the answers received. Here the self, by becoming part of a greater action, increases its own ability to deal with action. The principle that action acts upon itself is extremely important when we are dealing with psychological action. The principle that action is self-generating and that it cannot be withdrawn is also vital in connection with psychological action. Energy cannot be retained, it must be discharged. The very attempt to deny an action automatically changes the nature of the action and also changes the nature of the individual who attempts to deny it. All energy seeks to materialize itself, which is another way of saying that action must act. In the psychological realm, it goes without saying that a repressed emotion is never really repressed, since action cannot be retained. It must change. The cause of such difficulties lies not in the repression of an emotion, for this is impossible. The emotion, in one way or another, will out, but the difficulty lies in the attempt to repress the emotion. This attempt is itself an action. There is a term used occasionally to the effect that an emotional block is like a wall. The analogy is an excellent one. I have told you earlier that there are other kinds of structures besides physical structures. Emotions and thoughts have their own structures that may be manipulated in the same manner that physical objects are manipulated, generally speaking. An action has reality, as you know, within every possible field of activity. An emotion has an electrical and chemical structure. This is extremely important. It is not a structure that takes up space as you know it, obviously, but it is a structure nevertheless, and could be compared to the appearance of dream locations. Rob notes, in Volume 2, see the 44th session for material on dream locations. Seth, emotions are a quite natural portion of action, and left to themselves are fluid. They have electrical validity and shape. When an attempt is made to reject an emotion, this does not affect the emotion half as much as it affects the individual involved. The action of rejection in itself is detrimental and doomed to failure. I suggest your first break. Seth continues, you may perhaps come closer to understanding how these psychological structures are manipulated if you consider the same sort of structures as they exist as dream objects in sleep. If you toss a ball in a dream, neither the self that tosses the ball nor the ball exist in any space structure as you know it. In somewhat the same manner are emotion structures handled. A refusal or a denial, an attempt not to handle a particular emotional structure, involves action. The refusal itself is an action. Rob notes, Jane now took a very long pause. Seth, what you have here is an attempt to objectify or stand apart from action in such a refusal. This is not the fault of the subconscious, but a fault of the ego, which refuses to assimilate or accept a given action. As you know, it is the ego who exists as a result of such objectivity. All the qualities that make up the ego are objectified to that degree, but they are collected about the ego with the ego as center. When the ego, however, refuses to accept an emotion as a part of itself, it tries one of two actions. Either it attempts to return the emotion to the subjective state, or it attempts to objectify it further away from itself. In either case, the ego is at fault for not assimilating or accepting the emotion. It is easy to see, then, that the ego is itself a series of actions, that is, a collection of more or less similar actions selected from a larger mainstream of other actions. You will recall that the ego, while disliking change, is nevertheless dependent for its identity upon change. The ego, to a large degree, therefore, chooses during its development those characteristic actions which will form its nature. Because the ego necessarily changes, however, actions or emotions, which at one time it chose as acceptable, at a later date, so to speak, it may attempt to deny. The habitual pattern or characteristic nature of the ego may then be led to refuse to accept an emotion, at the same time that a pattern has already been set to receive the particular type of emotion. Here the ego fights against itself. Such an emotion may, of course, be given release through dreams, but this is of limited value to the ego involved, since the ego does not accept the reality of the dream experience. The strength of the ego actually depends on the flexibility with which it can accept and assimilate ever more complex actions and give them a unity of its own. An action or emotion not accepted by the ego, but nevertheless a part of it, will always drain energy from the main core of the ego, despite the ego's denial, an energy that cannot therefore be used by the ego for the purposes of its own purposeful action. The rejected emotion, in other words, will express itself in any case, but it will do so then as a rebel, outside of the organizational directives of the ego itself. Hence, for example, actions that appear senseless to the ego are often the results of such unassimilated or denied emotions. At one time or another, such emotions were acceptable to the ego. there was an attraction, or the emotion would not have been permitted to enter into a realm close to ego control. Inclinations with which the ego has very little liking, for example, are very seldom a problem for the ego, since they remain generally outside of the ego pattern, never having been chosen by it to form a characteristic part of the ego pattern. Obviously, to some degree, every conceivable sort of inclination is latent to the ego, but it is apparent that each ego has its particular set of adopted characteristics, its set of characteristics that it sometimes accepts and sometimes rejects. And it is obvious that some characteristics simply seem alien to any given ego. It is therefore with the second alternating group of characteristics that most such problems arise. An ego who can and has at one time or another accepted as part of itself a violent and unruly desire to kill, for example, will not automatically reject the emotion of hatred. He may dislike it, but he will recognize it as a part of himself during whatever period it is assimilated. An ego which once accepted such an idea of violence and knew it as a possibility of action, such an ego, if he then rejects the conception, can no longer afford ever to recognize this once acceptable emotion, for he is only too aware of the action that could have at one time developed. It is in this area that such conflicts arise. The man or ego who has never really accepted such violence as a part of his action pattern will usually have no conflicts in this particular line, simply because the inclinations was never a strong part of the ego's inner image, and is more or less discarded automatically, along with all other characteristics or inclinations which are not in his ego pattern. This is obviously somewhat simplified, in that the ego constantly changes, and the above examples must be read carefully or their meaning could be misinterpreted. Actions may appear to be separate, but they are all part of other actions, this being, of course, the basis of all organization, including that of the ego and the inner self. Again, it must be remembered that no real boundaries exist, only diversity of function. I suggest your break. Seth, all boundaries, therefore, are apparent boundaries, boundaries in appearance only. Groupings of action of any kind merge into other groupings, both within the physical field and outside of it. All apparent units are merely formed by functions, the functions of action. In this context, the ego is also a function of action. There are, of course, also functions within functions, which should be obvious. The ego itself attempts, as its function, to be the director and center of other functions. The ego, while considering itself apart from action, is obviously not apart from it. As dreams allow the inner self great freedom, and as in dreams great perspectives of time are valuable, and great freedom in space, though no space as you know it, is involved, so it is possible for the ego itself to achieve the experience of freedom from time and space, if it would only allow itself for a short while to relax the intensity of its objective focus. It could still do this and retain its own nature merely by allowing into its awareness the reality of other actions as a part of its self-image. There is, for example, no basic reason why the subconscious and the ego cannot communicate to a much larger extent than is now usual. Such communication would result in the acceptance of additional energy and action by the ego, and an expansion of the ego's self-image. It was necessary for the ego, in its origins, to objectify itself as much as possible. Now, however, the stability of the ego, generally speaking, as a part of the human personality, is established. It can now afford to be much more elastic, to include, in other words, more and more of reality within its awareness. Such an inclusion would be most beneficial. It would, of course, however, to some extent change the ego, and any change is resisted by the ego. Nevertheless, the course of future events will move in this direction. It must. The ego must change in this rather basic manner, including other realities within its scope of awareness. There is no basic reason why it cannot add its directive energies to other aspects of the personality, and if it could so expand it, would. Theoretically, be possible for the ego to become aware of many experiences which have been impossible for it in the past. The hope and the possibilities here, as well as some of the dangers, lie in the fact that the ego does indeed change, and not one specific reality, but a series or group of actions with direction that have the potentiality for unlimited value fulfillment. The ego will never be less than it is now. It may very well be more. Possibilities for development here are very great, but most such possibilities lie still in the future, and only so far as possibilities. There is nothing that will force the ego to enlarge the scope of its awareness. Rupert may now, if he wishes, work on his psychological time in the morning. I wanted that particular routine broken up for a while, but now, if it is more convenient, he may return to his old schedule, that is, the same time of day. But 20 minutes should still be the limit. We will shortly launch into a new discussion, though there are still some matters to be cleared in our material on action. I will now close the session, or if you prefer, you may take a short break and continue. Rob, we'll close then. Seth, my best regards to you both, and a most fond good evening. Rob, good night, Seth. Rob notes, Seth referred to Jane's endeavors with psychological time because she has been having trouble establishing an effective routine for it in the afternoons. She always found it natural to try it between 11:30 and noon, after she had put in her morning's work writing, and before I get home from work.